From Dallas, Texas, the liberal and progressive capital of the world, it's Conversations.
And this is Jeff Sickles in the Radio Left Studios for a Thursday Conversations. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about how to build community and how to actually talk to people on the other side without getting your blood pressure up and having them actually listen and maybe listening to them. We'll be talking with Vicki Robin for the entire hour. Right now, of course, we have Carolyn Kay in Chicago, and we have Brad Freeman, who is the proprietor of bradblog.com. And I have no idea where the hell Brad is. Where are you, Brad?
I'm in Los Angeles.
You're in Los Angeles, okay. And give us just a real thumbnail about how you decided to start Bradblog.
Yeah, actually, I can't even remember how I decided to start Bradblog. It was really just originally a hobby, something that was just fun for me. And I was covering politics, and I was covering media and things that got my blood up a little bit, but it was really meant to be a hobby. It has quickly become sort of a 24/7, 365 job, and we're only in, let's see, 1 year old as of January, and have broken a whole bunch of stories and gotten into a whole bunch of trouble along the way.
Well, that's really great, and of course, there's a particular story that you're going to tell us about, and tell us how you came across this.
All right, well, I was covering after the November elections. Sort of woke up November 3rd and said, well, what the heck happened here? It just didn't make any sense. And I started to look into the issues related to the electoral irregularities, as they became known. And I believe I was one of the, there was just a few of us back then who were even willing to talk about the fact that something seemed to have gone wrong. So I was reporting on election irregularities that were popping up all over the place, and there was more and more stories, and it was somewhat surprising how few people were covering it back then, and even today, to be honest with you. But so I was covering it, and I guess I sort of became known at bradblog.com as someone who was covering this issues, these issues reliably, and wasn't really reporting on speculation and so forth, but actually, you know, hard news stuff, 3,000 votes disappearing here and so on and so forth. So I became a source for some of this, received hundreds and hundreds of tips in this, and most of them really didn't pan out, so they weren't reported when they were sort of larger conspiratorial tips. The story of Clint Curtis, however, when that tip came to me, and I looked at it, the more I looked at it, the more it did pan out. And I've been reporting on it now for about 3 months at Bradblog. And so far, I have yet to find a hole in his story, yet I found a whole bunch of holes in the story of the guys that he's been whistleblowing on.
And let me point out that that original story that was broken back in December of 2004 is on RadioLeft.com, and it links back to BradBlog.com, where all the stories are, including that one.
Yeah.
So, what was it that you were told that got your interest up?
Clint Curtis was, at the time, a computer programmer at a software company down in Oviedo, Florida, by the name of Yang Enterprises, Inc. He was a lifelong Republican, at least up till that point, and he was a programmer at this company. And the corporate counsel and registered lobbyist for the company was a gentleman by the name of Tom Feeney, who was, at the time, the Republican Speaker of the House in Florida, in the Florida legislature. So he was both their corporate counsel, a registered lobbyist for them, and Speaker of the Florida House, the only one, mind you, of, I believe it's 160 members of the Florida House, who was also a registered lobbyist. So that conflict of interest right there potentially might...
Since he was a lobbyist and had that conflict of interest, the Republicans made him Speaker.
Well, there you go. They did make him Speaker, and what he did at this meeting in October of 2000, and Clint Curtis has given me an affidavit, a sworn affidavit, with all of this information, fairly detailed. What he did in October 2000 was he came to a meeting at Yang, and they often had sort of development projects there, development meetings, and he had asked for if Yang could create a software prototype that would allow them to flip the vote on electronic voting machines. Curtis alleges that Feeney was very specific about what he wanted, that it had to be a program that could work with touchscreen voting machines, that would not require any additional equipment, you know, like keyboards, etc., and that the code for this for these vote flipping routines would not be visible if someone were to inspect the source code. Curtis at the time said, well, I can do two out of those three, but if anybody inspects the source code, they'll see that they'll see the vote flipping routines, and it can't be hidden.
This is Carolyn. Did he not say, was he not told at that time that that it was to prevent others from manipulating the vote?
I'm not exactly sure if that's what he was told or if that's what he assumed. For whatever reason, he assumed that they wanted this program because Feeney was afraid that Democrats might do this, and they were interested in how to keep that from happening.
How to save the world from Democrats.
Correct. So that's what he thought he was doing. In the meantime, he says, well, you can't hide the source code. They said, well, anyway, go do it. So he went away, wrote this program. It's a very simple program. It's just a prototype to show how it could be done. I believe it's maybe 24 lines of code, as I understand it. Came back the next day, delivered it to Mrs. Yang, who is the CEO of the company, including documentation and everything else, and said, well, here, I got it all done. The only thing I couldn't do was hide the routines in the source code. It can't be done. She said at that time, according to his affidavit, that you don't understand. We have to hide the source code in order to get the contract. This program is needed to flip vote in South Florida. At which time Curtis explains he was somewhat floored, but said, well, I'm sorry, it can't be done. She took the software and went away, and that's largely what we know about what happened to that particular program. In the meantime, Curtis went on, saw a lot of other things at Yang that were incredibly troubling. What he claimed were illegal aliens, Chinese illegal aliens, working there and inserting wiretapping modules into software that went into contracts that Yang had with NASA and with the Florida Department of Transportation, et cetera, et cetera. Eventually, he left the company because he was troubled with that sort of, you know, the sort of company that it was, and he ended up whistleblowing on them when he found his new job at the Florida Department of Transportation and talked about all of these items. And Yang apparently was overbilling FDOT, and he reported on the Chinese spies, yada, yada. Some years later, now, one of those alleged Chinese spies, well, I guess he's not alleged anymore, was actually arrested as recently as March, I believe it was, of 2004. And he was charged, this fellow, Hai Lin Ni, or they called him Henry Ni, was attempting to send chips that were used with in Hellfire anti-tank missiles to the People's Republic of China. They caught him doing this. He was charged. He was, after a four-year sting, he was indicted with three charges of espionage. He pled guilty to one of them, and in his plea agreement, by the way, which is also on bradblog.com, he admitted that, well, it was a slow year, so we only did this 10 to 20 times over the past year. Well, he was sentenced in October of 2004, and Hai Lin Ni received 3 years probation and a $100 fine for what he did. Something is going on. Now, I should also mention that this is all notable, if only because Tom Feeney, the gentleman who came in and asked Curtis to create this program, allegedly, was at one time Jeb Bush's running mate in 1994 for Jeb's original run for governor down in Florida. Now, Mr. Feeney is a U.S. congressman as of 2002, and as well, he sits on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee.
I'd like to also point out that he was the person who threatened that if the Florida courts managed to say that Al Gore won the votes for Florida, the electoral votes for Florida in 2000, that he would personally see to it that the legislature negated that vote and sent electors for George Bush to Washington.
Yep, that's him. He also, by the way, threatened to have Florida secede from the Union if the budget deficit in Florida went over something like $6 billion. So he's an interesting and colorful character, Mr. Feeney.
Yeah, and all of this just sounds like you made it up. I mean, that's what's so amazing about it. I'm not saying you made it up. I'm saying this is the kind of thing that's like, who could possibly believe that anybody would actually do something like that in the great United States of America?
Yeah, well, I had, as I say, you know, I was getting hundreds of tips, not exactly like this, but, you know, with wild-eyed conspiracies and everything else. So I was very, very careful with this one and looked into it in great detail before reporting anything on it. And now I suppose it could be possible that Curtis is not telling the truth about the vote rigging thing. However, he has reported quite a bit that over the past, we're going on 3 or 4 years now, that has all largely been verified and is true. And in the meantime, the Yang Company has come out with statements, as has Feeney, as has their attorneys, which were all immediately, demonstrably incorrect. Yang put a statement on their website saying Henry Ni, that Chinese spy I mentioned, was never employed here at all. And, of course, as soon as they did that, the next day I showed some public records that showed Yang billing the Florida Department of Transportation for work that Henry Ni had done. We have about 9 different weeks where he worked 40 to 60 hours each week for Yang, and he has signed these time slips, and we put them up on the web. So, you know, all I can tell you is the things that Yang and Feeney, our attorneys, are saying keep coming out and can be shown as being demonstrably wrong, while so far I have been unable to find anything that Clint Curtis has said that is proven to be untrue.
And how much have you been able to document as actually being truthful?
Well, there is certainly the Chinese spy information is has been shown to be true. He was claiming that the Yang was overbilling the Florida Department of Transportation. That is, well, that has been shown to be true in a preliminary report. There is another report coming out on that matter. The final report is coming out, and actually we're currently in the process of receiving that final report, which does in fact seem to show that Yang overbilled by hundreds of thousands of dollars to these guys. There's also one other bizarre or troubling element to the story that I didn't mention, which is that after Clint went to his next job at the Florida Department of Transportation and whistleblew on everything that was happening at Yang, the Inspector General for the state of Florida that worked with the Florida Department of Transportation, his name was Raymond Lemmy, he was looking into this matter, was issuing preparing to issue a report on the whole thing. In the meantime, Clint and another whistleblower at the DOT was fired without explanation, and they both filed whistleblower suits. In any case, after Clint was gone from the Florida Department of Transportation, Ray Lemmy, the Inspector General, tracked him down at a job that he was at the time at I think it was a 99-cent store down in Florida. This was in June of 2003, and Clint claims that he says to him, "Hey, Clint, you're going to be very happy with the report. It's about to come out in a few weeks. This thing goes all the way to the top, so keep your ears open. I think you'll be very happy. 2 weeks later, Raymond Lemmy was found dead in a Valdosta, Georgia motel room. The police report said it was suicide. I have the police report. The police report also said that there were no pictures from the scene due to the flash memory on the camera having failed. Well, that's what we've just been able to get a hold of.
Oh, pictures?
The pictures?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I've been in the process of talking to Valdosta police about those pictures and where they came from and why they're available now. By the way, they, and this is some breaking news for your show here, they actually reopened the Raymond Lemmy case last December due, as I say, to, quote, interest on the Internet. So that case was reopened, and now there are a number of questions that I have that I've been looking into concerning the entire matter. And I've been in the process of talking with the Valdosta police about it. I will have more on that in the coming days, the coming weeks.
So, do you have any idea what the pictures actually show?
Yeah, they show a dead guy in a bathtub.
Crime scene photos, Jeff.
Yeah, no, I understand, but I'm wondering if they show anything that indicates suicide or not.
It's hard to tell from the photos whether it indicates suicide or not specifically. There are a couple of very troubling elements, however, to the material that's in those photographs when you compare them to what was said in the police reports. Quite a few things don't match up.
Now, all of this is about the potential wrongdoing by Yang in its work for the Florida Department of Transportation. Is that not correct?
Well, that's what Ray Lemmy was looking into, but I believe that he also had the authority to look into all of the reports that Curtis was making at the time, including the illegal aliens that were working for Yang and the alleged spying that they were doing, because I believe the IG's office is a branch of the state of Florida, and they're able to look into all of these issues, and there's no telling how far this thing goes as it concerns China, as it concerns Mr. Feeney, et cetera, et cetera. But
right.
Suffice to say, somebody...
Because I want to make sure I understand, neither you nor Clint Curtis has been able to show or provide any proof or anything that his code was actually used in any way, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so basically what we know about election fraud from what he did is that that they were looking for ways to game the system.
Exactly, and it's actually interesting, the routine that Curtis claims to have put together was such that if you attempted to use the vote flipping routines, what would happen is if your candidate, the candidate you wanted to win, let's say the Republican perhaps, if the Republican was already winning, it wouldn't change any numbers whatsoever.
Right.
So, however, if the Republican was losing, the numbers would be flipped to give the Republican 51% and to give all of the other candidates a combined total of 49% in the same percentage that they had previously before the flip. That 49 number may be notable.
Was this an attempt to make sure that they didn't have more votes than there were voters in the precinct?
Well, he didn't talk about that specifically. It would sound like the routines that Curtis came up with would have done that, would have precluded there being more votes than voters.
Because as it turned out, there were many precincts where more voters voted than there were voters.
Indeed. Curtis will tell you that, he doesn't really know if his software was ever used, but he's a big advocate now, obviously, for voter-verified paper ballots.
Absolutely, me too, and Jeff too. Jeff and I are both systems people. We're both technical people.
Right.
I just want to make sure the listeners know about a couple of articles on not you know Clint Curtis in particular, but on the whole process and the unlikeliness that so many of the exit polls were wrong. One, I haven't seen myself, but I understand that Christopher Hitchens, of all people, has written an article in Vanity Fair about how unlikely the Ohio vote was. And there's also a very good article in These Times right now for that sort of, you know, it sort of brings together. You mentioned that there were lots of cases that were brought to you mm-hmm. of questionable dealings, possible fraud, blah, blah, blah. In These Times article says that there are more than 100,000 reported instances of something being wrong.
Yes, there are. And as a matter of fact, I'll take the opportunity to go ahead and plug another organization that I ended up helping to set up because of all of this and all the great people out there who were trying to get the word out about the various election irregularities out there. It's called Velvet Revolution. And the address is velvetrevolution.us. And we have got articles and so forth going all the way back to November when I started tracking all of this stuff, documenting hard evidence that something is amiss here. And so at velvetrevolution.us, you can get all of that. You can get action links. You can get analysis. The articles you mentioned are both linked there. And as well, we've got a very exciting action coming up that I'm not going to show our hand about.
Well, let us know. I mean, you give us a, you know, when you're ready to go public, let us know.
I by all means, our website. Really exciting action, and we're you know trying to do something about these problems. You know, I was never an activist before.
Me neither until 2000.
Until 2000. Well, yeah. I'm much newer at it than you. I guess I became one in just the past few months.
Well, it's something that has to be done, and the Democratic Party wasn't doing it to my satisfaction, and the mainstream media.
And you guys ought to be, by the way, affiliates with VR, with Velvet Revolution, because what we're doing there is not party-based, it's issue-based. Our first issue, of course, is electoral reform. We'll be looking at some other issues as well, but hey, you know, if the Democrats aren't performing, we'll take on the Democrats as quickly as we'll take on the Republicans.
Right, right, because it is our government, and we should be electing the people, no question. By the way, I'm going to be part of a panel discussion in Oak Park, Illinois, just west of the city, and in April, and the Cook County voter registrar is going to be there. He's going to be on the panel too, so I'll be able to fill his ear with a bunch of stuff that I'm, you know, I just am sure that most of these people don't know.
Indeed, and be sure to let us know, by the way, so we get that listed over on our action links.
Okay, very good.
And get some folks out there to give you some good backup.
Very good. We'll do it.
So the Clint Curtis story, presses on. It's been interesting the action we have received in the mainstream media. And where the story is now, it's interesting because it's almost as if, as you said, Jeff, I think, that it sounds like we must be making this up because it's so incredible. And I can only guess that's one of the reasons, as I understand it, when I talked to a lot of the mainstream media folks who began contacting me in droves after I first broke the story, and I'm still in touch with, I think that it's such a good story that they're frightened of it, that they think there's got to be something wrong here, and they're all sort of sitting around and waiting for the other guy to report it first. You know, for if New York Times reports on it, then they can all say, as the New York Times reported today, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but, Brad, if you'll recall, when it came to the Florida shenanigans,
yeah.
The New York Times posted all that stuff, you know, wrote about all of that stuff 2 years later.
Well,
you know,
indeed.
I mean,
I'm no supporter of the New York Times, and I've been, you know, quite critical of them. I was quite critical of them for months, of course, especially after the election, It was interesting, however, that once I broke this story, several New York Times reporters then got in touch with me and wanted to know more. So, as well as some rather large news organizations that I don't want to go into detail, some broadcast organizations and so forth. I don't want to go into detail, but they seem to be interested. I know for a fact that they're looking at this stuff, and I suspect it will be breaking into the mainstream very soon.
Good. I sure wish I knew what the tipping point was, because I'd use it if I did.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if Quint, maybe if we could dig up some naked pictures of Quint Curtis or Tom Feeney.
That would be great. That would be great.
Yeah. I guess that's what it takes, is naked pictures to get it into the mainstream.
Or
you can also be a right-winger, and that right-wing bloggers seem to have no problem being into the mainstream because they own the networks. Period.
Well, they're all interrelated and all working together, and we have not been doing that on our side, but I have hopes that there are certain efforts afoot that will help help us on our side do better at getting things out into the mainstream.
No, I think so. I heard part of your conversation before I came on, and I wanted to encourage you both that I think things are changing, that there was a time when, if Republicans reported on something, it got covered everywhere, and there was nothing that Democrats could come out and, we could say that the George Bush had sex on the White House lawn with a goat with video, and it wouldn't be covered in the mainstream.
No, you got that wrong, Brad.
No.
If he was having sex on the front lawn of the White House with a goat, all the Christian conservatives would bring their children to watch because it would have been a newly discovered sacrament.
Ah, there you go.
And they would have said, oh, well, at least it wasn't the Oval Office.
Well, and they would have criticized the left-wing bloggers for going into his personal life.
There you go.
But my point is, I think that's all changing from what I understand and the people that I'm talking to and some of the efforts you mentioned that are afoot to organize some of these groups to help them get their message out better. On the right, if you can get a story to Matt Drudge, it'll run on the Drudge Report, and that indeed means that everybody on talk radio and on the right wing internet sites and everywhere else, and of course Fox News, we'll pick it up and run with it immediately, which then means that CNN and MSNBC and all the
it was reported on Drudge.
What's that?
It was reported on Drudge.
Exactly. And they don't
as
even
if
say
that
it was
gives it some kind of legitimacy.
Yeah, as long as they see it there, that is essentially their marching orders to head on out and report on this story, and the facts be damned.
Right.
We don't have that kind of a network.
No.
We've got a whole bunch of folks that are sort of working separately, all for good causes, but they don't have that big network. And so there's a few things afoot to change that. In fact, VelvetRevolution.us is meant to do exactly that, to be sort of an umbrella group for all of these organizations. In our first issue here, electoral reform, there are scores, hundreds of groups representing millions of folks who are working on electoral reform issues, but they're all sort of working separately. So my hope in forming VR was to sort of bring them all together under an umbrella group where their voice can be a lot louder and where we can funnel resources and people and money and everything else to the various smaller efforts that are going down.
Well, that's another thing that's been missing on our side. One of the first things I began to realize as I delved into politics in 2000, and particularly after Bush prevailed in at the end of 2000, was the funding that they have on the right.
Oh, yeah.
There is hundreds of millions of dollars a year is spent finding talent and paying talent and promoting talent, people who do research, who write and pontificate for the right-wing point of view. And meanwhile, on our side, we've got some people trying to do it in their spare time, you know, do their blogs in their spare time while they have full-time jobs.
Exactly.
And it still doesn't seem as though anybody on our side is terribly concerned about that.
Not enough are. I know there are, you know, large funders out there, and they're putting their money somewhere, but it's not the sort of organized effort that you see on the right that proliferates and, you know, ensures that even paid journalists, like Armstrong Williams, for example, are also on the dole from the GOP, getting, what was it, $240,000 to speak in favor of No Child Left Behind. Then you've got, of course, the Talon News Service, the mysterious Talon News Service, and the not-so-mysterious anymore, Jeff Gannon.
It's underwear boy.
Right. who may, you know, in fact, also be a wing of this, of the White House, we don't know, who may be certainly a wing of some GOP group by the name of GOP USA, mm-hmm. whoever the heck they are. So they're willing to put money behind their causes because I don't think it's about, you know, for them, it seems to me anyway that it's more about power and control and remaining in power than
and
it is about issues.
Diminishing the power of the opposition.
Which is largely to, you know, help them stay in power.
Oh, absolutely.
With folks like you and me, you know, we're, you know, concerned that every vote is not getting counted, whether it's Republican or Democrat, and that people don't have a national right to vote in this country.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. It's not about, you know, John Kerry or anybody else getting in. You know, I should make it clear, I was not a John Kerry supporter. I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for Bush either. Don't get me wrong.
Good.
But, you know, the point is we tend to be more concerned about issues, it seems to me, and less concerned about power, because the people who are in power in the Congress, even they don't seem to be concerned about power because they're losing it fast, and a lot of their behavior over the past couple of months shows why, in fact, they are losing it. So we'll see. Maybe Howard Dean will change things around Washington. But
I hope so, because I'm a great believer in the bottom-up approach. I mean, I think about the number of people there are who have excellent ideas who are never heard. You know,
yeah.
they don't get heard anywhere.
Indeed. But the problem is, even with the bottom-up approach that you're talking about, if these guys own the voting machines, it doesn't matter how many people there are, you know,
right.
hell on the bottom.
Of course, it depends on how blatant they're willing to be.
Well,
in this election, they didn't try for a landslide.
Well,
Bush claimed a landslide, even though there wasn't one.
Right, and well, I think the point is that it's much smarter, of course, for them to not try for a landslide.
Right.
All they have to do is be in power, and as you say, they can come in and claim any mandate they want, as Bush did in 2004, and as he behaved in 2000.
Right. He actually did the same thing there.
Right. So they
my way or the highway.
Yeah. And they can't, you know, they can't create a landslide when you have these independent polling organizations that are supposedly independent, I hope they're independent, you know, reporting that the vote is very, very close. You know, they can't all of a sudden report a landslide. What they can, however, do is keep the exit pollers from, you know, releasing their information and controlling the information of the election of the exit pollers, and that seems to be precisely what they are now doing. And that's incredibly troubling because
I hate to tell you that the exit pollers in the United States were also the exit pollers in the last election in Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
where their polling showed that the anti-leftists actually should have won that election.
Well,
so to me,
yeah. They were also the same pollers the exit pollers that did the Ukraine.
And oddly enough, it was Colin Powell and George Bush who were the first ones to come out and say, oh, there must have been fraud in the Ukraine
uh-huh.
because the exit poll said the other guy should have won.
Well, and it was the guy that we supported.
Right.
So in every case, the exit pollers either poll in favor of the guy, the people that we want in power in these situations, or they discredit their own polls.
Right. It was accurate when it occurred in the Ukraine because the guy we wanted didn't win. But here in the United States, of course, the exit polls must have been inaccurate. So far, nobody's been able to come forward with any reason to believe that those exit polls were inaccurate, including the group that made them. They put forward some report which, you know, basically said that the reason there were more folks who voted for John Kerry in their poll is because there was more people who said they voted for John Kerry in their poll. I mean, it makes
Jeff and I had a theory about that. You know, if that's actually true, that Bush voters did not want to talk to the exit pollers, imagine why.
Well, and also
surely they were ashamed.
Well, and where is the evidence for that? I mean,
I know.
There's no evidence. There's no reason to believe that other than
their assertion.
They must have been afraid to talk to exit pollers. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. There's
and the
no
numbers
evidence.
Don't even show that.
And there's no evidence, and their report and what they have to say about the exit polls is tinfoil hat stuff and conspiracy theorist stuff. And
which is what they claim we are.
Which is what they claim that we are. So go figure.
Well, it's just amazing, isn't it, Brad?
It really is. I mean, at some point, I think prior to the elections, I started referring to it as bizarro world around here because, I mean, it's just the stuff that these guys are doing and the Bush administration is doing, it seems to be, as Jeff Gannon put it about the Democrats, that they've divorced themselves from reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you know, a lot of the progressive bloggers, you know, started putting onto their blog a member of the reality-based community.
Proud member of the reality-based
right.
community.
Right. When we were hearing numbers of folks who were getting killed in Iraq, and then Bush or anybody else would come forward in the administration and say, things are going great in Iraq. It's, what?
But see, I lived through this through Vietnam.
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing. In fact, I was in Vietnam for a year and a half. And I would look at the statistics on the mimeographed sheets they would hand out to the troops. Oh, we killed 100,000 Viet Cong yesterday. And well, how come there were so many more Viet Cong cropping up every day?
Right, it was going beautifully. And also, don't forget that Richard Nixon won his second term by a landslide. So don't be discouraged, folks.
Yeah.
Changing as long as folks like you guys and myself keep telling the truth, keep talking about what's going on. I encourage everyone to start a blog and make noise about what they're hearing and to email stories around that they find on bradblog.com and everywhere else to get the word out, because until we have an organization like Right Wing does, it's up to the people. It was up to the people in the Ukraine to overturn that election, and they had, what, a velvet revolution where they came out, hit the streets, and said, we're not going to take this.
Right.
That's what we need in this country, and that's the critical mass that we're moving towards, and, you know, that's what's going to change things in this country.
I think it'll happen because I see a lot more support. You're one of them, Brad, for example. Those of us who, you know, thought we saw what was going on in 2000 and beyond, and got concerned enough to really get involved. We felt like kind of a small tribe,
right?
You know, but this time I see many, many more people involved, and especially the blog software became available, so that made it easier for a lot more people. I was a technical-oriented person to begin with, so I could do a website, you know.
Right.
And so I'm hopeful because I see signs of more people getting upset, more people getting involved, Democrats starting to finally raise their hands in opposition to one little thing or another,
right.
You know, which makes me feel good because if we don't have an opposition party...
Yes, I agree. I think things are certainly looking up, or as Mr. Bush said, we've turned the corner. So we're turning the corner. It may not be the one he wants us to turn, but we're turning it anyway.
Right.
And we're going to take back the media, and frankly, we're going to take back the country from these guys who really have hijacked it.
Yes,
and,
they have.
You know, we're going to do it peacefully, and we're going to do it by using the truth. And, you know, I'm a strong believer that the truth wins every time, and that if you don't give up, you can never lose.
That's right. That's right. Even it gets discouraging sometimes, but as I tell the people that, you know, when they write to me and say, oh, I'm so discouraged, you know, I say, yeah, all, but we've got to keep putting one foot in front of the other. You know, I think.
Realize that the ones who claim to be the great Christians are always the ones that you have to watch out for.
Yep, that's what they said about the Antichrist, that he'll be very charming.
Well, it does. In fact, tend to be the seeming the most religious and the most, you know, we think he does protest too much. You know, take a look at Jeff Gannon and the type of questions.
Now you have to start using the correct name. His name is Underwear Boy.
Ah, okay. Underwear Boy.
Yeah, we're doing cartoons.
Unfortunately, it turned out he wasn't Underwear Boy. If you took a look at the further pictures that America blog discovered about him.
Yeah, but they have little squares in the wrong places.
Well, you can get to the, no, actually they're in the right places, because I've seen the pictures before the squares were there. And you should be thanking John Aravosis of AmericaBlog.org, giving him a plug, not that he needs one right now, but you should be thanking him for getting those pictures and putting it out there and making it clear, you know, just exactly what is going on. And, you know, when you've got the Washington Post and the New York Times and so forth coming forward and saying, oh, it's outrageous that these bloggers are going into his personal life.
Yeah, that was Howard Kurtz's line. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, this is not his personal life. He was a hooker.
In the White House.
And he had access to the White House and to CIA documents, and furthermore, it has come out in the last day or two that not only did he have access to the White House like 3 days after this mysterious Talon News organization appeared, but he was in the White House press briefing room before Talon News ever existed.
Yeah,
so how did he get those credentials? And today in the New York Times, I believe Maureen Dowd wrote an article saying that she was denied credentials to the White House, and yet Jeff Gannon, who appears to have been a hooker, was allowed access.
Well,
you know, so we turn up that sort of story on the left, I guess, and it's, you know, oh, it's conspiracy theory, oh, it's going into his personal life, yada, yada. I don't think I remember Howard Kurtz and the other folks complaining about going into people's personal lives when there was a different president in the White House.
Absolutely.
Who had a different personal life.
Absolutely. They really wanted to delve into his personal life.
Right. It's only when it's on the left.
Well, don't you understand that it is, it's the politics of personal destruction when you attack a Republican?
That's correct, yes.
You see, and when the Republicans attack a Democrat, they're doing God's work.
That's right. It's about the rule of law when they're attacked.
Rule of law. Oh, my God.
Remember the rule of law?
Oh, I do. And I also remember the president can't be above the law.
Right.
You mean like insider trading at Harkin Energy?
That's right. Some of your younger listeners.
No. Wrong president. Wrong president.
That was George W.
I know, but see, Clinton was the one who couldn't be above the law.
Oh, right.
George
right.
Bush can do no wrong.
Yeah, some of your younger listeners may not remember, but there was a time when Republicans seemed to care very, very deeply about the rule of law as it was applied by the White House. That's changed for some reason. I don't know what happened, but they're not quite as interested in the rule of law anymore.
You don't think maybe they're hypocrites or anything like that, do you?
I am a fair and square, down the middle investigative blogger, and I would never say anything so scurrilous about anybody.
Yeah, right. Well, Brad Friedman, Brad Blog, Com. We'll have to have you on again as you have
absolutely
more developments.
Keep us up to date on what you're doing.
Hey,
when
Jeff,
you've got a big new
announcement. Thank you very much. I'd love to come on anytime. Unfortunately, there's too much stuff breaking. By the way, I should mention, I just noticed over at popdeck.com that a story that I broke 2 days ago that we haven't even discussed here is, according to popdeck.com, of the 14,000 or so sites that they track, apparently a story of mine is now the number one most linked story.
Tell us what the title of that one is. We don't have time to really go into it, but tell us what it's about.
Generally, a few days ago we discovered that CNN ran a story on North Korea in which they used a photograph that said that showed what the caption said was a believed to be a nuclear facility near Pyongyang in North Korea. They ran that story last Saturday. And then we also discovered the previous Wednesday they ran a story on nukes in Iran and showed a photograph of a purported nuclear facility in Iran.
And they're in Missouri.
No, it was the exact same photograph.
Exact same photograph.
Same photograph, okay.
Exact same photograph. And there's more to that story. We can come on and talk about it another time, but it does not look like it was an innocent accident. There's a reason, a very powerful reason to believe that there is much more to the story, because a year ago, a U.S.-funded site, news organization, Radio Free Europe, was writing stories on Iraq and Iran and North Korea, and in all instances, they were using a photograph, a different photograph, but of the same facility. So who's feeding CNN these photographs? Why are they running them without checking them? I've spent 5 days waiting to hear back with any kind of explanation from CNN. They won't give me one. Draw your own conclusions.
Well, Brad, there is something, though, that you ought to know. I went down here in Dallas to the Fox News channel and was on their morning show talking about my radio program and my blog a couple years ago. And you can imagine what Fox is like in Dallas, Texas, right?
Indeed.
Well, that's certain. But I will tell you that every single person I ran into practically was coming up to me and whispering in my ear, "I'm not really one of them. I'm not really one of them." And so when I see something like this with CNN, I wonder if maybe it isn't somebody that's actually our friend doing a little sabotage to call attention to something.
I think that is not too difficult to believe. And I think the story that you tell, especially down there with the double whammy of being both in Fox News building and in Dallas, and the fact that there's folks saying, you know, "I'm not one of them, I'm not one of them," sort of underscores, you know, something that I believe, which is, look, these guys in the mainstream media, they're getting a pretty nice salary, many of them, and they want to keep that salary. So it serves them better to not make waves and to go out and report what their editors want them to report and not cause trouble. Because, boy, if you, you know, fall out of lockstep, ask Ethan Jordan or, many reporters, ask Dan Rather. If you fall out of lockstep, boy, it could be your career. So why not play it safe, keep your contract, feed your family? Fortunately, I don't make any money blogging for the most part, although I've recently asked for more donations to help me continue doing this at bradblog.com. But, I don't answer to anyone. I report what I find out there, and if there was more folks doing exactly that, I think right now this country would be a lot better off, because they make too much money in the media and they don't want to lose it. And I can, I guess, understand that, but it's certainly a far cry from where we were back in the Woodward and Bernstein days, when the press really was the fourth estate and really was looking out for the citizenry. I don't believe that they are anymore. It's a precious few in the media right now who are still doing that.
And that's going to have to be the last word, Brad. Thank you for being with us. Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. I'm tongue-tied. Thank you for being with us, Brad.
Thanks to both of you. Look forward to being on again soon.
Hi, Brad.
And Carolyn and I will be back with you for just a couple of moments before we go to our second hour program. But we're going to listen to Ms. Terry and come back for just a minute after that.